It's time for the WJBM Outdoor Show, presented by Midwest Tractor Sales. We'll hear from your host, Aaron Quillen, after this.
New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines from Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville put more premium grain in the bin and save you money while doing it. Compared to competitive brand combines, CR Twin Rotor Combines lose significantly less grain. Independent third-party test results prove it. And CR Twin Rotor Combines use less fuel and harvest faster to save you real money. Finish your season sooner with more grain safely in the storage bin. See Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville about New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines. They give you performance that pays.
Welcome to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today, we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. Today joining us, we have Mr. Ethan Malink. Ethan, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you. Yeah. So, Ethan, we met essentially through a friend. Told me, hey, this young kid is quite the waterfowl hunter, and he's very personable, got a great head on his shoulders, and you know, if I needed any help at Monarch mm-hmm. Rivers,
yep.
And so we talked, found out that you were cousins with Lauren,
yeah,
my girlfriend, and I'd say the rest is a wrap.
Yeah, small world.
Yeah, so. Recently graduated high school.
Yep.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Glad to be done with it. That's
absolutely.
For sure.
Did something fairly unique, homeschooling.
Yes. Yeah. So all my 4 years of high school were homeschooled, and that allowed me to hunt a lot more.
Yeah.
And I was able to work. My parents own a plumbing business, so I was able to work with my dad. And, yeah, I just got to hunt and, I mean, still got to learn everything, you know, did what I had to do.
It
definitely opened me up to a lot more things that I was able to do school in 2 to 3 hours a day instead of going and sitting in a classroom for 8 hours. And I could do it when I wanted to on my own schedule.
Right.
And so, it just allowed me to do the more things that I wanted to do a lot more.
Yeah.
So that was nice. That was nice. But yeah. So just finished.
So were you always this passionate about hunting?
So I grew up where in my family, my dad, he's always been a deer hunter. My mom, she has always been in the outdoor world, thanks to her dad. I grew up where when my dad would shoot a deer and my mom was at home with me and my brother, he's 2 years older than me. We would be 2 years old and 4 years old, and she would dress us up and we'd go help dad find the deer. So I was exposed to it at a very, very young age. And I don't remember a lot of that, from when I was younger. So I grew up being very involved in the outdoors. When I was old enough, I was taught how to shoot a gun safety. And it's really just caught on from really ever since I could remember it and could understand how to do it.
Right.
It's my life now. I love it. There's nothing that I would rather do than hunt.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah.
It's 100%, as are a lot of people.
Excuse me.
What's your favorite game to hunt?
That would be tough. So I've killed 3 or 4 deer in my life.
Okay.
I don't really deer hunt. I've always been the bird guy in my family.
Yeah.
I would say it's pretty hard to beat big honkers.
Yeah.
I love ducks. It's fun. It's fast paced. It's fun. I love snow geese. But I would say honkers is just, that's kind of where I've put most of my focus. And, That's what I love doing. I love turkeys too. I really love turkeys. And I'm glad that they're separate times so I can hawkers and then turkeys. But no, I love shooting geese. It's fun.
It's really fun.
And just goose calling too. I really love that. I mean, I've been doing that ever since I could blow a call. I mean, there's pictures of me when I was, before I could walk, blowing a duck call. I've been doing that for a long time and kind of been getting into contest stuff the past couple years.
Okay.
So I would say honkers. I love them.
Nice.
Yeah, for
sure. The thing that I find about honker hunting is, and I'm not a good caller. Mm-hmm. I hunt with too many of y'all that are good callers mm-hmm. that I'll probably never be a good caller. But I've noticed that guys that are good callers pay attention to the flight of the bird as they're calling.
Yep.
And that's how you deliver your notes based off yep. of what the bird's doing and what you need it to do.
Yep.
Walk me through that a little bit.
Just reading the birds. And I think that really goes with, you know, calling ducks and then using a e-caller to call snow geese. You know, it's same thing with a turkey. Mm-hmm. Just reading, and every bird's different. Every group of birds are different. Just kind of getting a feel for what, I mean, you're making fake noise to a wild animal.
Right.
So feeling out what those birds are doing. And what you need to do to get those birds to do what you want them to do. It can be tough because, like I said, you know, you're talking to a wild animal,
right.
Which I think is pretty cool. That's what I love about it. And I mean, it's different whether you've been scouting a field and you're hunting on the X where those geese want to be and have been for the past 2-3 days, mm-hmm. or if you are just under the flight line of those birds.
Yeah.
Just being under the flight line, running traffic, they call it. You're going to want to be loud, more aggressive, because mm-hmm. you aren't necessarily where those birds want to be.
Yeah.
But you are in the area that they want to be in.
Yeah.
So more loud, aggressive calling, just like letting them know, hey, don't go there, come here.
Yeah.
Changing their minds, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And then if you are where they want to be, just soft calling. Or sometimes no calling at all. I've seen that work great. It's just every group of birds is different. Every yeah. bird is different, which I think it just makes it more fun.
Right.
In my opinion. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's always blown me away. Be with, you know, hunting with somebody that's an exceptional caller.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get a group, knock them down. It's just that
mm-hmm.
you see that when they were doing this and then I hit that note
yep.
and then they
yep.
I mean that yep. to me is it's calling on a different level
mm-hmm. yeah no and I really started to take notice of that the past couple years and different years are different and different time of year is different too like there was I think of this one particular hunt. It was me and one of my buddies. We were on a like a pasture pond.
Okay.
And those geese, some of them had been going there, some of them have not been going there. And which I mean, you can be calling and you can do. I mean, you can be loud and fast, and those geese just keep on going. Or you can be soft and just trying to make it really realistic, and those geese just keep on going.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, as the hunt goes and you start to see more geese and you call it more geese, you realize the notes that are going to work for that day. And, I mean, you can see birds. They go past you and they go out. You hit one note, and they that's when they start to come back. Or you can another group hit that one note and they just keep going.
Right.
So it can be tough to figure out, or it can be easy to figure out. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of variables that go into it.
Yeah.
I mean, really pretty much every variable you can think of really goes into reading the birds and calling at the birds. And if you're going to kill them that day or how many you're going to kill. I mean, that being hide, what, like how the pitch, how high or low your call's tuned.
Yeah.
Whether where you're at, your decoys, really about any variable you can think of that goes into that hunt is going to affect it.
Yeah. So growing up here, Mississippi Flyway, lots of different people out there hunting. Who are some of the guys that have influenced you?
So my mom's dad, he's always been a big duck hunter and goose hunter. So I've been going with him for as long as I can remember. Out at his house in Brighton, he's got a pit there.
Okay.
So that's been an easy spot that I've been able to go to for a long time, kill a lot of geese out of.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of hunts where we haven't killed the geese out of there, but you know, that's a part of it.
100%.
He is what made me get into waterfowl hunting, really. And that's kind of just what I've mainly focused on. In 2020, we moved from outside of town. I'm from Bunker Hill into town. And I moved into one of my neighbors. He was a big duck hunter. And my other neighbor, which is actually his brother, we were in between them. Okay. He hunted pretty much everything. So I would do a lot of squirrel hunting with him or go deer hunting with him sometimes, turkey hunting. And then the other guy, he hunts at Horseshoe, Carlisle a lot. So I started going with him, and that's what really just kept me into it.
Yeah,
is what I would say.
Okay.
That's what I would say.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So waterfowl season is a great way to break up the winter.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I like being outside in the frigid cold.
I do. I mean, there's times where I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah.
Why am I doing this to myself? But then you get in late July, and you're like, man, I miss that.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely like the cold. I really do. I prefer the cold. I'm not a big fan of warm weather.
I don't mind the warm. Something about the elements.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm outside, a snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
If it's snowing, a lot of times I just get in the truck and start driving around. I just love being out in it.
Yep.
Or if I'm out shoveling, whatever it is, for some reason, my whole life, I've just enjoyed doing stuff when it's miserable outside.
Yeah. When most people don't like it.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So, With your waterfowl calling and experience, you're doing some shows, some contests, right?
Yeah. So I did my first contest. I think it was 2019.
Okay.
It was at the Mississippi Valley Calling Classic in Burlington, Iowa.
Okay.
And they actually, once COVID came around, that was their last one. So they don't do that show anymore.
Okay.
So I did some duck calling there and... I mean, I wasn't super prepared for it. Didn't do very well, but you know, it's part of it.
You got to start somewhere.
Yep. So I've gotten into it more and more. I've been to Squad Fest a couple of times.
Okay. Now that's Dive Bomb, right?
Yep, that's Dive Bomb's show. Yeah. And then this past August, I went up to Presley's Outdoors.
Yeah.
In I guess Peoria.
Yeah.
And called there and. Didn't do as well as I would like to because I had some call troubles. But you know, that's a part of it too. But it's just fun. It's great people.
Yeah.
Always everyone that I've met in the waterfowl industry is great people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you're all there for the same reason because you love it.
Right.
And it's a good time.
I'll go to Presley's anytime just to walk under all those
Blue
geese mounts that they have.
It's cool. Oh. Yeah. That was my first time ever being there.
Yeah.
It's a neat store. And I'm like, everyone in the store is great.
I don't think you can go through there without having an eagle head over you somewhere.
I know. It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't that cool?
I love that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So do you have any, like, when let's shift to the spring a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When you go out turkey hunting,
mm-hmm.
you're obviously a decent turkey hunter. You had a pretty successful season this year.
Yeah.
Do you deploy anything that you use from calling at ducks and geese to your turkey calling?
That's actually a good question. Just reading the bird.
Okay.
I guess they call it taking the temperature of the bird.
Yeah.
trying to think of any instances that have happened. Well, I'll go back to the last bird that I called in. I think it was 2 weeks ago, fifth season.
Yeah.
My dad shot one, and we had gone one morning and didn't hear anything, didn't see anything. So we went to work, and we were working at this house in Brighton that had a field behind it, and there was a strutter out there from, I think we got there at 8:30 until about 11. He was strutting out there, gobbling. He ended up calling two other hens to him, so he was just teasing us. And that was after a bad morning of hunting.
Yeah.
So we got permission to hunt that. So we went back there the next day and set up a blind. And I killed my first turkey out of a blind. I don't like hunting in blinds.
Okay.
I like sitting up against a tree.
Yeah.
I think, in my opinion, it makes you feel like you're really more one-on-one with that bird.
Yeah.
More out there. So we set up a blind just because we had to. And we never heard anything gobbling on the roost. And this bird came out into the field and just... it was like a switch flipped. He just started hammering. So he was gobbling and gobbling. He was kind of coming towards us a little bit. And so I called, and he gobbled. And, from the time he entered that field until about 15 minutes later we killed him, he probably gobbled 30 to 50 times. He was on fire.
Really?
So that was super neat. And so he started coming. Once I called, he started coming towards us. And, he was probably about 60. And he turned to his right and started walking kind of away from us a little bit. And he was kind of going behind a little hill, just still gobbling and gobbling. And so after I hit that first call, we didn't have any decoys out. So he knew that a hen was there.
Yeah.
He responded, so he heard it.
Yeah.
And he would kind of get to a little half strut a couple of times. So he was fired up. He knew I was there. He didn't know where, which is kind of what I wanted to keep it at.
Uh-huh.
So he was coming towards that sound. And once he started to drift off of that, still gobbling, still fired up, kind of strutting a little bit. Once he was probably about 70 yards away going the other way. I was like, if I don't call again, we're going to lose him. So I called again, and that spun him on a dime.
Really?
And he came pretty much right up that hill right to us, gobbling the whole way. My dad shot him, and it was 41 yards.
That's awesome.
And he smoked him. And it was just
a stud bird, too.
It was a good one. Yeah. It was probably a three-year-old bird. I think it was right at an inch and eighth spurs and 10-inch beard. It was a good bird.
Nice.
So that was cool. I like that because one reason I like turkey hunting is I think given certain circumstances, it can get pretty personal. Like we saw that bird yesterday.
Uh-huh.
He teased us for 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Like you kind of... I don't want to say it. You build a connection with that bird. You know it's him. And
you might be mad at him, but it's still a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's pretty cool because that bird was there. He was there all day yesterday, and we were able to come in here and kill him. And I think and there's just been multiple instances like that the past couple of years where you get beat by a bird and you go back out there and you have history with it. Same thing with the deer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're chasing a big buck. What can be a couple years.
Yeah.
And I think it just makes it that much better killing them.
Yeah.
It just makes it more personal.
One of the bucks we killed this year was actually second year of downfall, which made me more mad at him.
Uh-huh.
Because he got through his peak years.
Uh-huh. Which, you got to give credit to him. That's impressive. He was able to get around you that many years until he was getting old.
And then once we figured him out, it was just a matter.
Yep.
It was just a matter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's awesome.
So you were in on more than just that one bird. You were in on several birds this spring.
Yep. So I had two tags this year, which got a little lazy on the lotteries. Put in for first lottery and got a first season tag and then didn't put in for the other two lotteries. And then when they went over the counter, I was in Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I came back a couple days later and all they had left was fifth season. So I had first and fifth season. This is the first year we got my mom a tag, and okay. So we were wanting to prioritize her first.
Yeah.
So opening morning of first season, we went out, and she killed her first turkey. It was a Jake, but she killed her first turkey, so that was awesome.
Phenomenal.
So called in, I think there was five or six of them.
Okay.
She missed her first shot, but ended up connecting with her second shot, thankfully. So that was cool. Nice. She was pretty happy about that. And so that was the first day of first season. And the second day of first season, I went out and I took my girlfriend with me. And that was the first time she's ever been hunting with me.
Yeah.
And we had a bird come into us at about 30 yards. And I mean, it was 6:23 when I killed him. So it was early. It was before, I think that was a minute after the sunrise.
Okay.
And I shot that bird with, it was a 410. It was an old single shot 410. It was my uncle's gun who passed away about 10 or 11 years ago.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So those were the first two birds. And then my dad had second season. And we got our butts kicked a couple mornings with that. Never ended up filling that tag.
Okay.
My brother had third season. He killed a bird.
Okay.
So that was cool. And then I went with one of my buddies. He had fourth season, and he killed a bird. And then fifth season came around. And first day of fifth season, I shot a bird. And then I think it was... I don't remember exactly what day my dad killed it, but he killed another fifth season bird.
It was towards the end of the middle of fifth season. Because I remember you messaged me.
Because fifth season opened on a Thursday. I killed my bird on a Thursday.
Which was, I think, the 8th.
Yeah. So I think it would have been, I mean, I can go back in my phone and look at it.
It's not that important. But I feel like it was in the double digits.
Yeah.
It was 10th, 11th, something like that.
Yeah. It would have been the Monday or Tuesday, so
yeah,
11th or 12th, I think. Yep. So it was a good season, though. It was good.
So your dad's bird, fifth season, that was out in the middle of the open field, right?
Yeah. So
no
that was
decoy.
No. We had a decoy in the blind with us, but we never ended up putting it out.
Okay. Now, the blind, were you kind of tucked up against some structure, or were you out in the middle of it?
So we were on a big hedgerow.
Okay.
Probably about 10 foot off of it. So pretty out in the middle.
Okay.
Kind of sitting by ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No decoy, mm-mm. Mature bird.
Yep.
Blind in the open.
Yep.
That's not what, I don't think most people would expect that to be the setup.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. What were you calling at it with?
So I'm a mouth call guy. I love diaphragm calls just because you can rely on them pretty much always working.
Yep.
So that was the first bird I called in with a slate call.
Okay.
I've never called one in with a slate call before. I've never messed with friction calls too much just because, I mean, you sit there for a minute trying to get the right sound out of it.
Right.
With the mouth call, you can just let it go.
Yeah.
So I think it was a Rock Outdoors slate call.
Okay.
It was the first slate call I bought a couple years ago. It was the first time I've used it.
Nice.
So that was the first bird I actually ever called in with a slate call, too.
All right.
So
what were some of your other setups like?
My mom's bird, my dad, he had went there the morning before, mm-hmm. and he seen where them birds came out. So we had a general idea of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, my dad killed a bird there pretty much in the same spot where she killed hers.
Yeah.
So we've been on that property before and kind of knew what the pattern of what they were doing was. So we went out there and set up two hen decoys and a Jake decoy.
Okay.
And they weren't really gobbling on the roost at all. And they finally... You could hear them all gobble at one time. I mean, they were Jake's.
Yeah.
So I called and no response, nothing. And the morning before, it was like 7:01 when he said they popped out into that field.
Okay.
And it was me, my mom, my dad. They were on a tree to my left, and I was to the right of them, more closer to where they were coming out.
Yeah.
And I could finally see one's head pop out. And I looked at my phone. It was 7:01.
No way.
They were on a schedule.
Right.
So they came into that field. And I think, like, there was five of them, I'm pretty sure. And so they walked past me at about 10 yards. And then they seen those decoys and were getting up to them. And that's when she shot, missed. And then they all took off running. And then she shot again and killed one.
Nice.
And then the day after that, so that night I had went to another property trying to roost a bird, and I guess you could call it successful. I never heard anything gobble, but I heard what I thought was one flying up.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not sure, you know, it's kind of a thing where it happens and you're like, it doesn't happen again. So I was like, is my mind playing tricks on me?
Right.
So I was like, I guess I'll just, I mean, that's the only information I got. So that's what I'm going off of. So, me and my girlfriend, we went and slipped in the woods about 80 yards from where I thought he was.
Yeah.
And, it was getting pretty light and nothing was gobbling. And I'm like, oh man, I'm getting a little nervous here. I'm like, what's going to happen here? And finally some crows flew over the timber. And he sounded off at the crows, and that was just, like, relief. I was like, oh, he's there.
Yeah.
And then so I called at him. He gobbled on the tree. I seen him fly down, and I called at him again. And he gobbled, and he gobbled a couple times. And about 40 yards in front of us, there was a little hill. And I told her there was two big trees. I'm like, he's going to come out right there. And that was before we even heard him. I was like, if this turkey's going to come here, like, he's going to come out right there.
Right.
And he pops up right there, and I was like, he's coming. And so the bird ended up being a Jake.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know that until a couple seconds before I shot him. So he came up over that hill, and I didn't see a beard, and I was like, must be a tom with no beard. I had that beard rot.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. So he was about 40 yards. I called and I made him gobble right in front of us, and I'm like, all right, that's a tom.
Yeah.
And he
full gobble.
Oh yeah, yeah. And like, I wish I would have had on video so I could show other people and prove it. I'm like, man, he sounded like a gobbler. And he got to a spot and he stuck his head up, and so he stuck his head up. I think that was when he kind of saw us, and he turned to the side and I could see his little beard sticking. I was like, oh, that's a Jake. And I was like, oh well. And I shot him and I smoked him. But you know what they say? I mean, if he talks like a man, he dies like a man. She was with me, and I had that 410, so.
That's pretty special.
I mean, it was pretty cool. I'll definitely remember that one for a long time.
That's
awesome. I mean, it was textbook. Can't get any better than that. 15 minutes, 10 minutes off the roost. Just perfect.
Yeah.
So that one was pretty sweet.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break real quick. Word from our sponsors.
See more and do more in a new 300 series compact track loader from New Holland. Its industry-leading 360-degree visibility is truly something to see at Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. With its reverse camera and 8-inch multifunction LCD display, Super Boom lift technology, rock-solid stability, and redesigned controls, you'll work with greater speed, safety, and precision. Maximum productivity starts with a clear view. Stop by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville today and see how a new 300 series compact track loader helps you do more. Jonathan Prane with Tarrant and Harmon Real Estate and Auction Company is a full-time land broker who can help you maximize your hard-earned dollars. Call Jonathan for a free assessment and to assist you in selling or finding your income-producing farm, dream hunting spot, rural home, or investment property. Jonathan Prane with Tarrant and Harmon Real Estate and Auction Company. Call 618-225-0568. 618-225-0568.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoors Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. With us, we have a young man that is quite the hunter, Mr. Ethan Malink.
How you doing?
Just dandy. Dude, what is amazing to me is sitting in the blind with you this year, a little bit during the spring snow goose. You know, the attention to detail that you had. Mm-hmm. As the geese were working,
mm-hmm.
You had calls
mm-hmm.
out front, out back. You were using a couple of different sounds. I mean, we all know the power of the Rossi peep, right?
Oh, the Ross boss. I love it. That is my hands down my favorite sound.
But you had so much. I don't even remember what it was, but you had said, all right, so I'm at on this call out front, this volume,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm running this. I think it was a couple of sounds mashed up.
I think, yep, it was the there was two sounds on the front box and two sounds on the back box.
And
yep,
you're running the two off the back, and you had specific volume range,
mm-hmm.
which, if I remember right, it was a low wind day.
Mm-hmm. The second day, yes. And oh, wait, no, the second day was the windy day.
So one of the, I think we were running the calls low that day.
Yep.
Because I remember wondering, all right, what volume is he going to be at,
mm-hmm.
you know, given these factors, yep. knowing that it should be, and you were like, I think you were like, yep, I'm running this on like 13 or 14. And then when they work out over that, it would have been the northeast corner.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm
yep.
cranking
mm-hmm.
Ross Boss up to yeah. specific volume.
Yep.
Just the attention to detail
mm-hmm.
was pretty impressive. What kind of things are you reading for you to, one, choose to mash up two different call sounds? And for anybody listening, a lot of these callers that you use during the snow goose conservation, you can take two different snow goose sounds and combine them together. So in a sense, that's what we're calling a mashup mm-hmm. here. But what, how do you choose your sounds for when you're mashing it up?
So kind of what I was looking for was a high-pitched call, which would be that Ross Boss.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a bunch of high-pitched like honks in it. And then I would pair that up. I don't exactly remember which one it was, but with like a feeding sound.
Yeah.
So that low growling, couple barks here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got that high-pitched and the low-pitched on one sound, essentially.
Right, and that was kind of more where the kill hole was.
Yep. And then out back, it was mainly two louder sounds, higher pitch sounds.
Okay.
Yep.
Almost like what it sounds like when they're flying overhead.
Yeah, yeah. Just a bunch of loud barks. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
All right, and then, you know, is there any thought that goes into which specific ones that you're using, or is it just based off of...
Reading birds.
Yeah.
That comes into it. Like if you get one group that'll come and look over you and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of like, all right, you kind of run through a little checklist here.
Mm-hmm.
What does our hide look like? Well, our hide looks okay. It ain't that.
Right.
Decoys look as good as they can.
Yep.
It's gotta be the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So either bump it up for the next group or lower it down for the next group.
Yeah.
And then eventually you'll find what they're wanting. So with that particular spot, really, both days we were there, it was lower it once they get closer as to not blow their eardrums out when they're right over the top of you.
Right.
And when they get out and they're swinging, crank it up and let them know, hey, come back. You know what I mean? Like, don't leave. And that was what was working those 2 days for sure.
Yeah. At that moment, I heard you say, when they get out here, I'm turning Ross Boss to whatever it was.
I think it was 26.
Okay, to 26.
26 or 28, yeah.
And you were just so like detail-oriented, but you also knew specifically, you turn Ross Boss to 26,
mm-hmm.
they're coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
sensed all that, and I was like, this kid's on point.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. How'd you end up overall this year? What do you think the snow goose migration was about?
So I hunted IRB a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then I hunt a spot north of Carlisle.
Yeah.
which we did not do very good this year. A couple factors with that is we're pretty close to the roost.
Okay.
The pit is on a levee, so it sticks up pretty high, so you can't hide very well. You're pretty close to trees, so any sound you're putting at the trees is bouncing off, which can throw the birds off a lot.
Yep.
And we are about 800 or 900 yards from an outfitter.
Oh.
Yeah, and they got a big spread.
Okay.
So a lot of factors working against us there.
Yeah.
But we still managed to kill a few. IRB killed a few. Those are your later morning birds that you get coming off of Carlisle Lake, usually around 9:45, 10 o'clock. What's tough there is there's a lot of competition around.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure how many they killed this year or how well they did. I know the pit to the south of them did pretty well.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. What did we kill off that lease field in 2 days? I think it was around 20.
Yeah.
I think in 2 days.
20 is exactly it.
So that's not bad. It's a pretty good hunting.
Yeah.
But last year I noticed the birds went through very quickly, pushed through very quickly.
Yeah.
Which made it tough. Not as much of your separation of adults and juvies like we usually get.
Mm-hmm.
This year I think it was definitely slower. And there was that snow up, the weather we got up north kind of pushed them back a little bit.
Yeah.
And then there was that separation of adults and juvies. And at one point, I don't know exactly when it was, but I noticed that we had a big push of Ross geese around. Like, me and my buddy, we were looking at a field, and it was a majority of Ross geese. And I've never seen that before.
Oh, wow.
So I think that was after the big adult push, and then that was when your Rossies and juvies were coming through. So I think it was a better year this year than it was last year, just because of how they came through and the speed of which they came through and how they kind of got bumped down a little bit and then went, you know, kept going. So I would say it's definitely better than last year.
Yeah,
for sure.
One thing I thought was interesting difference between this year and last year is that storm that kind of pushed them back.
Mm-hmm.
It was very cold.
It was.
It was almost too cold to put a new setup out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we start this whole thing talking about, I love being out in the cold.
Yeah.
That was a little bit
more.
You're not going to get a couple thousand decoys out.
And you're setting decoys out around the weather is tough.
Yeah. You just aren't going to do that. But it seemed like they were still here as to where other years, when it freezes like that, they're all back in Arkansas.
Yep.
And I felt like they stayed a little bit better than they do in other cold years.
Yep, and I agree with that. And I think one thing you can run into when it comes to pushing birds back is they're just going to get beat on that much more.
Uh-huh.
That way, when it warms up, they're going to they're going to go.
Yeah.
And I think once it did kind of warm up, I think that is what I think they got out of here pretty fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a little bit of weather that kind of made them stick around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah.
And then you have a unique perspective because you're hunting essentially from Carlisle all the way to the Illinois River.
Yeah. So, I'm hunting right by the roost that supplies the birds that come all the way up here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a big difference. There's a lot of variations there. For sure.
Yeah. And then another thing that I found really interesting about, you know, being around you during the snow goose season is you had a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I was going online reading, you know, different. You already had that information, but maybe some from some other sources too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that. You're a younger generation than I and most of the guys out there, what are some of the things that you're looking at resource-wise, and how are you keeping your finger on the pulse of the migration?
Yeah, so just having resources is a great thing with anything, really.
Right.
So just being that I do hunt different areas, I can get a word on what the roost is looking like, or what 3 hours from the roost is looking like, you know what I mean? Or while we're hunting in that lease, what it looks like 30 minutes south of us.
Right.
You know what I mean? So just talking to guys that I know where they're at and if they're hunting. I mean, there's different things, I will say. I'm pretty sure they're on Facebook, but they're on Instagram. It's called the Migration Station.
Yeah.
So they do like daily reports of duck, goose, like Canada goose and snow goose migrations.
Right.
So that can be a great thing to look at. Gives you a map, tells you where they've seen reports from.
Yeah.
And then one thing that comes to mind and specifically is like the Lowe's Bluff, they have a Facebook page that will tell you every once in a while how many geese are here.
Okay. Who's that?
Lowe's Bluff. It's in Missouri. I think okay. It's Mound City.
Okay.
So they usually hold a lot of snow geese.
Okay. And that's not an outfitter, it's like a refuge?
Yep, it is a refuge. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then they do counts.
Okay.
I don't think it's daily, every few days.
Yeah.
So you'll know when they show up there, when the mass of them is there,
right.
Kind of when they're starting to leave.
Yeah.
And then I'm not 100% sure if Carlisle does any counting. I think they might before conservation season starts. But I'm sure on Facebook there's probably something you could find.
Okay.
That'd be able to tell you.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. No magic app that you younger kids are using?
No.
No unicorn hunting app yet?
No, not yet.
All right. Yeah, I generally go online and try and do some research, but it's really difficult to get, you know, real concrete information.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I think that's kind of a struggle everybody's got.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of things out there that I don't even know that could prove useful.
You're talking about millions of birds all over the U.S. So it's like, how many have been through? How many?
Yep. How many are where? How many are dying?
Right.
Since that count.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things for sure. A lot of birds and a lot of people trying to hunt them.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
I don't know how effective we are as hunters, though.
I've heard not good enough.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. For sure.
As long as we can keep hunting.
Yeah, that's no kidding.
No, I haven't done the math, but I looked at it. I think that the numbers of snow geese have significantly grown since the whole e-collar nuisance season.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
They're just getting smarter.
Yeah.
There's an older gentleman that I've talked to that when the conservation season first opened.
Uh-huh.
If you killed 100 birds, I mean, that's your average, is 100 birds a day.
Uh-huh.
If you're killing 60 or 70, that's a bad day.
Think about, you know what a Texas rag is?
Yep. Yeah, that's what they're hunting over.
Right.
And so since then...
Would you use a Texas rag in your spread?
Probably not today. Now, that was when it first started. I mean, that's kind of going back to when the spinning wing decoy first got introduced to duck hunting. Guys were beating the crap out of ducks over them.
Oh, yeah.
So you're introducing these e-collars and unplugged guns, making a big difference. So the guys are beating the brakes off these geese.
Yeah.
And if you're killing 60 to 70, that's a bad day. I would do anything to have that.
Right. Where did those days go?
And it's just, there's more and more and more. Every year, more guys hunting them.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger spreads, bigger groups shooting at them, people jumping roosts. There's more pressure. And obviously, I'm pretty sure the average age of a snow goose is about 14 years, and it could be more than that. Don't take my word on that, but that's old for a bird.
Isn't that wild?
That's a lot of spreads seen, a lot of calls heard, a lot of times being shot at.
The highest limits on their way south, right? You can kill more snow geese than any other type of waterfowl.
Yeah, you can kill as many as you can.
On the way south, though.
On the way south, I believe it's 20 around here.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
On the way north, unlimited, electric collars, no plugs.
Yep. So, I mean, you're thinking 11, I mean, like 8 to 11 shots per guy compared to 3. Big difference.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, just guys are throwing bigger and bigger spreads every year. it's just a lot of pressure on them. And mm-hmm. there is a lot of birds. There's a lot.
And they're getting smarter.
Yeah, it's getting tougher.
Right, and then every once in a while, you'll have a giant freeze that kills the juvie population.
Yep. Yeah. Or just a, yeah.
It's funny how that works.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to keep hunting. And
excuse me.
Maybe I just shut my mouth and talk about it and hunt them. Oh, I like that. We're going to take another break. Hear a word from our sponsors.
New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines from Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville put more premium grain in the bin and save you money while doing it. Compared to competitive brand combines, CR Twin Rotor Combines lose significantly less grain. Independent third-party test results prove it. And CR Twin Rotor Combines use less fuel and harvest faster to save you real money. Finish your season sooner with more grain safely in the storage bin. See Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville about New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines. They give you performance that pays.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today, we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. And with us, Ethan Malink, Bunker Hill native.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Born and raised.
Dude, so are you technically a flatlander then?
I mean, it's pretty flat.
I mean, I'd wear that badge with pride.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I grew up.
I love
it. Great place.
I love it. Which is interesting because so Calhoun's all hills.
Yeah.
Right,
all hills and woods and a
get
river
on these bluffs
here and there,
and it's different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've done. I think I've hunted in Illinois on. I'm doing air quotes the flatland.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one time, long time ago when I was in college, it was a deer hunt.
Really?
Yeah, which is so interesting because I'm sitting here thinking about your turkey hunts.
It makes me so grateful to hunt where I do instead of walking up hills, because I have hunted in Calhoun County one time.
Okay.
And it's a big difference. It's rough. I mean,
there's pros and cons, plus and minus, right?
Yep.
So how do you get in on these birds when it's flat?
So a lot of the timber that we have around us is pretty thick.
Okay.
A lot of like that underbrush.
Yeah.
There's a few spots that are big, like a lot of oak trees, and it's wide open, which is awesome. One of probably my favorite place to kill a turkey.
Okay.
I love open timber. It makes it tough. But the three places that come to mind that are the most open are also have the biggest hills. So they'll have big ridges that are open, but then they got big dips.
Okay.
So it can be tough for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I could definitely see how there'd be a big difference when you got hills to work around and just not hills.
I just wonder how many times the top of my big dumb head has been seen as I'm trying to get somewhere, you know, over the crown of a hill versus, you know, trying to do that on flatland. But I guess with the draws and stuff like that, the turkeys are generally going to be in the draws.
Yep. I mean, if you want to get to that bird, you're going to find a way to get to it.
Yeah.
I have, 2 years ago, I shot a turkey. I had to take my shoes off, shot it with no shoes on. And I've actually shot two turkeys with no shoes on.
What is this all about?
So it was me and my brother were hunting, and, we got in on a bird early.
Yeah.
He's gobbling. We lost him.
Okay.
So we went up on top of a ridge, hit a box call, and he gobbled behind us. So he had went completely around us, 180 degrees. He was out in a field, just probably 20 yards from the edge of the woods.
Okay.
And so we got to, it was probably about 80 yards from the edge of the timber, in the timber.
Yeah.
And I could see that bird out there. And so I had mud boots on, so they're pretty loud.
Yeah.
So left them at a tree where my brother sat and crawled all the way up to about 25 yards and shot the bird.
Get out of here.
And so that was the first one I shot with no shoes on. And the second one, which is actually my biggest turkey to date, it was last year. It was fourth season. It had rained pretty hard the night before, and I had to cross a big creek to get to where I needed to be. And I didn't think about that until I got to the creek and it was going. And so I pulled my vest up, held my gun up above my head, and walked through. It was a little bit, a couple inches above my waist, deep water. It was a creek that was moving pretty fast. So it was tough to walk through. And then I got to the other side and was trying to walk in my boots. They just held water and
squishy.
Yeah. So I was like, this is not going to work. So I left him at the edge of the creek and got up on top of a hill, got in on a bird, and he flew down to another ridge with some hens. And so I went down to the edge of that ridge, called, pissed a hen off.
Yep.
And she came running to me and he followed her. I smoked him.
No way.
Yeah. And that was, I think he had right at about an inch and a half spurs and like a 10 or 11 inch beard.
And you're just sitting out there with your white Hanes socks.
Yep.
Just
yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been making that a trend the past couple of seasons. Just killing them with no shoes on.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, let me ask this. Are there any turkey hunting, waterfowl hunting, are there any technologies or anything, any equipment that you're using right now that just seems to be a game changer for you?
Onyx Maps.
Ooh.
I'm not paid to say this, but I love it.
Yes.
And I've hunted without it before, and I may do, but it has changed the way that I've hunted. I've been able to kill more turkeys with it, and I've been able to kill a lot more geese with it.
Really?
Being able to... Now, I'm younger. I don't know how to use a plat map.
Okay.
I've never looked at one of those.
Okay.
So being able to have it on my phone is very helpful.
Right. Let alone where do you find one, right?
Yeah.
You got to go to the courthouse.
That's true. Yeah. Driving on the road, seeing 100 geese in a field.
Yeah.
Pull up Onyx Maps. I can see who owns that land.
Yeah.
I can see where they live.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you a phone number. I wish it gave you their phone number.
I know, right?
And I can... Like, without that, I would have no clue who owns that field.
Right.
So, go, knock on the door. Hey, I got an app on my phone that says you own this field. Can I hunt it? Yep. Kill geese.
Yep.
Or turkey hunting. Knowing where property lines are is very helpful.
Yes.
And knowing who owns the land is very helpful. It's surprised me. I've talked to a lot of landowners the past couple of years. How many have said... either yes or no, but I appreciate you for asking because normally people don't ask.
Right.
Which blows my mind.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Because that thought never even crossed in my mind. I'm like, I mean, I can't hunt this unless I ask. You know what I mean?
Right.
Onyx has been a game changer.
Okay.
100%. And being able to like that bird I killed, the second bird I killed with no shoes on.
Yeah.
I roosted in the night before and I put a pin of where he was. I knew exactly where to go in the dark.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's helpful in many ways.
Yeah.
For sure.
I like that.
For sure.
I like that. Yep. And then what platforms, social media, do you use?
So I'm on Instagram mostly.
Okay. How do people find you on Instagram?
Ethan, I think it's Ethan_Malink.
Okay.
On Instagram. And then just Ethan Malink on Facebook.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you coming out.
I appreciate you for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah, man. It's good to chat.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
100%.
And then I got to figure out this. What is the famous party? Is it coming up in June? The family party?
Oh, the family reunion.
Yes.
I believe that is the second Sunday of every June.
That's right. Okay. Yep. So second Sunday of June.
Yep.
And that's the Malink.
Yep.
Family reunion.
Yep.
Lauren's been telling me all this, all about it.
Yep. I think it's a beaver dam.
Okay. And then just to get this right, Shorty.
Yep.
Beerman and your grandfather were siblings?
Yes. Yes.
I love it.
Yep.
Shout out Shorty. Shorty Beerman.
Yeah.
World's greatest grandma.
Small world, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So, all right. Cool, man. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
All right.
Fish, loving every day. I wanna see them tall pines sway. Y'all close them eyes. Let's go there in our mind. Hunting and fishing and loving every day.
That's the friend this country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting and fishing and loving every day. Black coffee in the morning, dark whiskey in the morning.